So it's Christmas Day, which means, among other things, that the long season of Christmas specials is at an end. Our friends at NPR's On the Media ran a story this weekend about the wild popularity of all these shows, especially the big three. You know them, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
She thinks I'm cute. My favorite line.
Charlie Brown Christmas. You got a line from that one?
Charlie Brown, of all the Charlie Browns out there, you're the Charlie Brownest.
See, God, the woman is good. And How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Go, Allie.
Oh, it's a little Cindy Lou Who and his heart grew to something times two. Something
that's pretty good. So even though all the shows are over 40 years old, they all still pull in more than 10 million viewers apiece. Now, seriously, my sister, who lives in Portland, Oregon, spending Christmas with her six-year-old, she tried to go to Blockbuster to rent any of these movies. All gone.
Oh, my gosh.
All gone. Everyone loves this stuff. So anyway, on the On Media reporters, Alex Goldmark and Rachel McCarthy tried to find out why? What makes these classics so classic? Here's Alex.
First of all, back in the mid-60s, there were only three channels. So a hit program or animated special could be huge. For instance, half of all American viewers watching TV the night Charlie Brown first aired were watching Charlie Brown. It was a cultural experience shared by the whole nation. And baby boomers, like teacher Larry Kaplan, remember it vividly.
When it came out, everybody in school was talking about it. Everybody was, you know, going home that night to watch it. And you had to watch it. If you didn't watch it, you were like on the outside. You didn't get to talk about it the next day.
Back then, the network subscribed to a big tent theory. Get everybody and their mothers watching, literally, and make specials extra special.
It was kind of like a golden age.
Phil Roman was one of the animators of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. He says there was a flood of creativity.
Disney had had a big layoff in the late 50s, and a lot of the animators had gone into television. So it was just a very, very, very exciting time to be around. It's a very fleeting time, but it was a very special time.
And the right time for these special characters. The Grinch was already a popular Dr. Seuss book. Rudolph had been a hit Gene Autry song and an advertising icon for years. And Charlie Brown was one of the most popular comic strip characters in America. That big name recognition was an advertiser's dream. Maybe that's why it was Coca-Cola, not CBS, that initially commissioned a Charlie Brown Christmas from Peanuts creator Charles Schulz. Executive producer Lee Mendelson brokered the deal.
When we were putting the show together, Schulz said, well, if we're going to do an animated Christmas show, why don't we talk about the true meaning of Christmas? And we said, what do you mean? He said, well, I think we ought to have Linus, you know, talk from the Bible.
And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men.
Mendelsohn said he and the animator were taken aback because nobody had ever animated the Bible.
And Schulz noticed our hesitation. He said, and if we don't do this, who will? And that's the line that projected us into the whole show, into the whole philosophy.
Mendelsohn wasn't worried what Coca-Cola would think about mixing the Bible with Vince Guaraldi's jazz soundtrack. He was worried about the slow pace, which was rare in cartoons, and also the use of real kids' voices, which was unheard of.
Look, Charlie, let's face it. We all know that Christmas is a big commercial racket. It's run by a big Eastern syndicate, you know.
Well, this is one play that's not going to be commercial.
What do you want?
The proper mood. We need a Christmas tree.
Ron Simon is curator of the Museum of Television and Radio.
It was not a phoniness of adults. It dealt with kids grappling with the meaning of Christmas. And here you actually have kids saying these lines.
So what was once seen as a big risk is now hailed as an innovation, like Rudolph's quirky cast.
What's the matter? Haven't you ever seen a talking snowman before?
Seems obvious now, but inserting narrator Burl Ives as a snowman into the story and yet still apart from it was a big step for animated storytelling. 2 years later came The Grinch, a major production, which under the direction of legendary Warner Brothers animator Chuck Jones made TV animation look and sound like the movies, only tailored for the small screen.
Then he got an idea, an awful idea. The Grinch got a wonderful, awful idea.
Of the dozens of animated specials since The Grinch, a few, like Frosty the Snowman, have endured. but none of them were particularly groundbreaking nor as popular as the originals. There was The Year Without a Santa Claus, also the lesser-known Chuck Jones special, Raggedy Ann and Andy's Great Santa Claus Caper. Maybe you remember He-Man and She-Ra, A Christmas Spectacular. Christmas Comes to Pac-Land? No? Well, neither does Ron Simon.
They're very forgettable, and no one has an allegiance to them at all. And it's really the progenitors, these three specials, that have started the trend and are now cemented as the Christmas memory.
Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
They're all created in mid-60s America, very special time. It's America where there's all possibilities, the possibility of racial harmony. It's the great society that we're going to take care of everyone in the society.
And then the true meaning of Christmas came through, and the Grinch found the strength of 10 Grinches plus 2.
When else would you get something like Rudolph's Island of Misfit Toys?
I'm the official sentry of the Island of Misfit Toys.
A jack-in-the-box for a sentry?
Yes, my name is...
Don't kill me. Jack.
No, Charlie.
Weird stuff, huh? Anyway.
That Charlie Brown can understand the meaning, that the misfit toys of Rudolph can be part of an entire Christmas, and that somehow even the sourpuss of sourpusses, the Grinch, can be part of a harmony, of a more perfect union. And that type of feeling, that idealism, is not part of our culture today. But it is a postcard from America's past.
From a time when we watched TV together, before narrow casting and five TV households, television's become more solitary today. The average program gets just over one viewer watching per household. But Senior Vice President at Nielsen Media Research, Patricia McDonough, says the Grinch, like the other specials, still draws an old-fashioned audience.
Which is a mix of kids, some teenagers, and usually at least one, if not two, parents watching it with them.
So when a baby boomer like Larry Kaplan hears the soft melodies of the Who's down in Whoville, it's not just that he remembers the hot popcorn of his childhood and singing to the TV with his brother 40 years ago. He also remembers doing it with his kids just last year. And this year will be no different.
It's our traditional way of spending Christmas Eve is to watch all the cartoons and all the Christmas movies. You know, when they were little, we'd do the old thing with the popcorn and things like that. Now we kind of have eggnog with, you know, a little rum.
Well, some little things have to change, even with a classic.
You're a mean
That's
one.
An NPR On the Media story reported by Alex Goldmark and Rachel McCarthy.
A story originally aired on the media. That does it for this hour of the Bryant Park Project. I'm Allison Stewart, along with Rachel Martin. Have a great day.